Maybe I'm in love with you. I say maybe. Maybe I'm in love with you.
Good afternoon. You've got Living Writers on WCBN FM Ann Arbor. I'm T. Hetzel. And today, I'm pleased as punch to have Ken Michalowski here in the studio. Ken, welcome down
to
the
station. I'm glad
to
be on Living Writers. I'd rather not be on Dead Poets.
I know. Yeah. Touche.
Let's go for it.
That's right. Let's live a little, right, Ken?
I'm ready.
Let's live. Today we're here in the studio. We've got Steph behind the glass engineering. Ken, we're here to celebrate an occasion. Currently there's an exhibit on at Hatcher Library, Free Poems and Functional Art, 50 Years of the Alternative Press.
50 years. Oh, my.
50 years.
Oh, my. Yeah, well, it started in 1969, so I guess that's 50 years.
So it makes it. This exhibit is going on. It started in February, at the end of February, and it goes through June 2nd.
Right.
So folks have a chance to swing by and see it.
It's in the Audubon Room on the first floor of Hatcher.
And we had a chance to actually meet up on Monday there, so thank you for...
We went around and... I played docent for that day.
Lucky me. And then today, lucky everyone, lucky all the listeners, because today we're going to be talking about some of the history and the stories, some of the good times and some of...
the bad times.
Yes. Here's to the times, right, Ken?
I'm on for it.
Before we start, a short bio, and then we'll fill in, as Ken and I said, we're going to be talking stories today. Ken Michalowski's books of poetry include Thank You, Call Again, Little Mysteries, Big Enigmas, and That. Listeners, you might remember when Ken was on the program before, we talked about That. So you'll be able to find that show on the Living Writers website. So you can hop there. And you can also head to the Living Writers Instagram to see a short video clip of Ken talking about the exhibit on Monday. Back to the bio. Ken taught at the UM Residential College for 38 years, retiring in 2015. Ken and his wife, Ann Michalowski, started the Alternative Press in 1969 out of their Detroit home.
We moved the press into our basement. We had never printed before in our lives, never. The person who helped us move the press in, and by the way, it's an intimidating presence. It weighs about 1,500 pounds, and all the type that goes with it, more tons of equipment. We moved it into our basement, and the person who helped us gave us about 20 minutes of instructions, and we said, wow, this is really confusing. Don't worry, he said. I'll be around. You can ask me questions. Well,
famous last words.
Yes. Then he moved to Chicago. Mm-hmm. So we had to learn to print. It was an intimidating presence, let me tell you. So we had to learn to print entirely on our own, and we did it. We did work it out, but by going to our printing supply dealer, and we would go in there and we'd buy a can of ink, say, and we'd ask them some questions, and they would laugh at us. They thought we were so innocent. We were such fools. We didn't know what we were talking about. They sold us we got a $5 can of ink, and then they proceeded to give us a $50 printing lesson for free because they thought we were amusing.
Well, and so how did it even come to be that you were thinking, you and Ann thought, let's move this tons of equipment into our home, into our basement?
What were we thinking?
Yes, from the Detroit Artists Workshop.
Right,
you bought this 1904
print. 1904, yeah. Chandler and Price clamshell letterpress.
And so what were you thinking? Like, were you thinking, you know, let's publish, let's make some art, let's publish ourselves and our friends, or our friends and ourselves? What? Yeah.
Well, when we got it's hard to say because I don't know what we were thinking. I'd been, the editor, when I was a student at Wayne, of the Wayne Review. And I always had arguments with the printers, thinking that, why couldn't you do this? Why couldn't you do that? And they'd say, well, we can't use that kind of paper because it, you know, this reason. We can't do that color because it costs too much. We couldn't do this. We said, well, we'll just do it ourselves. What a what arrogance. But then we did get the press, and we wanted to print our friends. That was pretty much, we had a lot of friends who wrote poetry and a lot of friends who did artwork. And so we published both poetry and art. And
these were friends along the Cass Corridor?
Yeah, the Cass Corridor group of artists were our friends. Anne was certainly one of the Cass Corridor artists. She, in fact, has four paintings up at the DIA. And one of them is of Gordon Newton, who is our good friend, who I collaborate with much often. And he died just a couple weeks ago. And so let's just say maybe this show should be dedicated to him.
To Gordon. All right. Gordon, yeah. To Gordon Newton. And when you, the sort of the birth of the idea around one of the major projects of the alternative press in these many years, is it fair to say would be the postcards project?
Well, I'd say it's probably the most unique thing we ever did, yeah. It was... We would turn artists and writers loose with 500 blank postcards. We would print their names on the back and the name of the alternative press on the back. And then they would have to do 500 all different, no two alike, poems, drawings, paintings, whatever, on the other side. We'd finally found the lazy way to print. We just did one side and they had to do all the rest.
Because you had a couple of lines to designate it as like a visual postcard for the address and maybe printed by the alternative press in the middle.
And that was what we did in the back of the postcards, yes. In the front, we're left blank. And it was really, I don't know, I think Rain Taxi magazine called it the most unique publishing project in American history. Because, well, who else would get Robert Creeley to write 500 poems, each one numbered and signed, all different, and he didn't keep any copies himself. Whoever has that poem has the only copy of Robert Creeley's poem. So that is pretty unique.
So to clarify, what you and Anne would give, like you would make and cut, and make 500 postcards, you would send it like as a batch to your, for example, to your friend Robert Creeley. He had 500 and he would start making them. And finish making them? He finished his 500. And
yes, but it took him 7 years.
7 years. 7 years. He's like, am I ever going to hear the end of that from beyond? But would he wait till after he had did it take 7 years for you and Anne to see those 500 back, or would he send them back to you in batches and you would start sending them out?
No.
Or how did the postcard project work in that way?
We waited until we got them all back, so we didn't send things out until we got them all back. When Bob did the postcards, he quickly got into this and did about 200 of them, and then he sort of broke down. He just didn't feel he could do a whole lot more.
I like how you laugh there. He sort of broke down.
He broke
when
down.
Faced with 300 more.
Right. So he put them in a closet and didn't get them out for 5 years. And then finally he got them back out again and finished the last 300 and then sent them on to us. And we sent them on. When he was interviewed by American Poetry Review about the project, they were incredulous, and they said, how much did they pay you anyway? And Bob said, if they paid me, I wouldn't have done it, which was exactly the right answer, because that's the spirit of the whole thing. Yeah, yeah. Other people who did them were Alice Notley and Ted Berrigan. They each got their 500. They were a couple. They lived in New York on the Lower East Side on St. Mark's Place. And anybody who walked into their apartment collaborated with them. And right around the corner was Allen Ginsberg, Eileen Miles, Joe Brainard, George Schneeman. These are all people who would just come to their apartment and had to write a line. And then and then Ted would write another rest of the poem, or Alice would do drawings on hers and watercolors. So the two of them really progressed the whole project went along with what Ted and Alice did.
So,
but the first person who did them, the very first person, was Gordon Newton. This person, he came to our house, sat around the kitchen table, and he wanted to do a postcard, but he wanted to do a drawing. So he had a Bic pen, and we had some blank postcards just sitting out. And so he started drawing on it with a Bic pen. No, he rejected that one. He tried another one. And he had done about a dozen of them. And I jokingly said to him, "Well, Gordy, you only have 488 more to go." And Gordy accepted the challenge. He was the first person who took on doing 500 of them. He did 500 Bic pen drawings. And they were wonderful. They really were a wonderful set of postcards. The next person to do them was Brenda Goodman, another artist. And then it just, once Gordy and Brenda did them, it just snowballed. A lot of people wanted to do them. I couldn't figure out, you know, how they'd want to do them, but they did. And so this project just grew and grew until finally a whole lot. Anne Waldman did them. So many different poets and artists. We did 500 metal postcards by Carol Steem, brass postcards with beads and rivets. And we did Andre Codrescu. Well, he didn't quite finish his.
Andre, if you're listening.
Andre, yeah, listen on here, because in fact, I just gave a reading with Andre in Detroit last week. We read at, with the Artist Workshop crew, and John Sinclair and others from the workshop. We did that at Third Man Records in Detroit. That was a nice event.
And you can see some John Sinclair artifacts in the current exhibit.
Yes, there is a letter from John from Marquette Prison when he was incarcerated for 10 years. Actually, he served 2.5 years, but they locked him up for, they're going to lock him up for 10 years for giving away 2 joints of marijuana.
And giving away?
Giving away. They tried to entice him, you know, by saying, "Oh, no, we'll buy it." But John said, "No, you can have it. You can have it." You know, and they busted him for distributing.
Yeah. And is it like an urban legend, or is that sort of the concert that was to raise, or the rally to raise money for John Sinclair's defense? Was that the beginning of Hash Bash? And was John Lennon and Yoko Ono and Allen Ginsberg there?
Yes. In fact, that's how I met Allen. Allen and I both read at an MC5 concert in 1968. And when we started our press in 1969, Allen came to Detroit to raise money for the John Sinclair Defense Fund. And he stayed with us for a week at our house. And he raised $4,000 in the 1 week. For a poet to raise that kind of money in one location for 1 week was pretty amazing. But then, of course, later on, he gave concerts at Hill Auditorium, and they sold out Hill Auditorium, which is, what, 4,000? Something like that? Yeah.
Sounds right.
People, I'm not sure how big it is, but it's quite big. Yeah.
Well, let's take a short break, and then when we come back,
let's take a break.
We're going to talk more about the alternative press, 50 years of the alternative press.
Gotcha.
Free poems and functional art. Today on the program, Ken Michalowski is here. I'm T. Hutzel. We've got Steph behind the glass. We'll be back. Thank you.
comes the bar. See, you can say, oh, he'll be proudly so what? Right till he dons the bar. See, you can say, oh, he'll be proudly so what? Right till he dons the bar.
Welcome back. You've got Living Writers. I'm T. Hetzel. Today on the program, Ken Michalowski is here in the studio. Ken, thanks for choosing the songs for today's program.
Well, that was the Frank Carlberg Group with Christine Correa, who's a wonderful singer, singing some of my short, dumb poems. That one was the Banner Spangled Star, which goes... Hailed we proudly, so what? Light early dawns the by. See, you can say oh. She's singing that, and she does a grand job. But there's a whole album of my poems. It's called Big Enigmas with Frank Carlberg Group. Okay, go ahead, T.
Well, and how did that come about, Ken? How did this collaboration happen?
Okay, again, we're back
to... Your life is about collaboration, too, with collaboration. Art and work.
I collaborated with artists, with musicians. One of my favorite collaborations with another colleague at the university, Mike Gould, who's a percussionist, and he and I collaborated on something called Remember Me, and it was a multimedia extravaganza. It had dancers come in from Berlin, musicians. It had Malcolm Tulip reading my poems. It had a light show. It had artwork. It was a spectacular production. And it's been done all over. It was done in Berlin. It was done in Ann Arbor, Houston, Texas, Indianapolis, and it's gotten around.
And then also this Frank Colbert jazz collaboration as well that we just heard too.
Frank Carlberg. I started that because he contacted me after doing an album of Robert Creeley's. He did one album with Creeley, and then he asked if I wanted to contribute some poems because Creeley told him about me. And that is how that album came about.
That's that. So Ken, with you and Anne and the Alternative Press, you started with free poems. So it was. Can we talk a little bit about the very early days and how?
Sure.
Because would you stand on street corners to give out these broadsides or bookmarks or bumper stickers or?
Okay. Well, for the first 2 years, we started the press. We didn't know what we were doing, but we were doing it. And so we decided we would give away everything we did. We wrote in every poem a free poem from the Alternative Press. And when Alan stayed with us, he gave us a poem, and we printed. He liked the idea of what we were doing. I don't know why. We just started. And so he gave us a poem, original first edition poem, which is what we always published. And it's called Rain Wet Asphalt Heat Garbage Curb Cans Overflowing. We printed it, wrote on it a free poem from the Alternative Press, and would mostly go down to the art museum and stand in front of the art museum and start passing out poems. Have you ever tried giving away poems? People recoil in horror. No.
Really?
Really. But then we got, then Anne, who was a really great artist, would often start illustrating poems. And there's one of Jerry Rothenberg's that she did a linoleum block border for.
Oh, this is a beautiful one. I'll put this one on Instagram, on Living Writers Instagram.
So this was the first, it says a free poem from, but this is maybe our second year because we've gotten better at printing. You can actually see it. It's actually legible.
Yes. Well, and there's a lot going on with it because you've got two colors and many different spaces and sizes of fonts too, as well as the bison.
Yes, that's our press symbol. Yes,
the press symbol.
The design though was carved by Anne out of a linoleum block, and so she did a lot of linoleum block prints, wood engravings, and things that illustrated the poems. So
you would give something the size of this broadside by Jerome Rothenberg out. You'd hand it out by the DIA.
And other places around town. But mostly, that's where we like to hang out with the DIA, yeah. And we'd pass them out for free, and it said, free poem from.
So do any of these... Has anyone kind of tried to collect these, or are the free poems out in the world, or do you hear back from people ever?
Well, the library has collected them.
Well, yes. Let's talk about that. Yes.
Well, the library in 1999 purchased our archives. And at that time, there was a pretty big event here at the university. Anne Waldman and Ron Padgett and Ed Sanders and Robert Creeley all came in to give readings for the event. And there were the other symposiums with Alan Kornblum from Coffee House Press, and other people came in and talked. And there's other local poets, Donna Brook and John Sinclair and Mick Vronich and Chris Tisch. And it was a big event anyway. And then, though, 20 years later, I'd still been printing, and not for the entire time, but still corresponding with everyone. And so I had quite a collection again, and I approached the library again, and they said, yes, they'd be interested. And so just last year, 2018, they got the rest of the alternative press, 50 years worth now.
So the University of Michigan
has
library.
Special collections, which is what, on the seventh floor of Hatcher, they have the complete works, of the alternative press. All the correspondence, all the manuscripts, all the trials, the errors are all up there somewhere.
And envelopes with the subscriptions that were sent out, some of these envelopes, you can see. And the press itself is up on North Campus at the Duderstadt.
Exactly. And I'm really pleased about that. The actual press, all the type, all the artifacts went with it, all the dingbats, all the things are up on North Campus and the Duderstadt building. And it's open for students to use. Jim Horton is now has open studio on Fridays. Although for the summer, I believe they're not open, but in September they'll be back open again for business.
So the public can go up to the
second floor of Duderstadt. Yep, it's behind glass. but yes, anybody can go up there. Yeah,
and even make something
that's the whole idea. The yes, they can. So, they can and should set poems, set whatever they want to set. Actually, carve blocks and print that too.
And so is this a way for the alternative press to keep going, Ken?
Well, it's going on without Anne and me now, but in fact, recently at the opening of the press show, we had Rebecca Chung printed a bookmark, and she did a lovely job, by the way. It's amazing how it's a poem I wrote for Anne just after Anne's death, and it's called Gone for Anne. I keep finding pieces of you here and there a lone earring, bent bobby pin, stray hairs and such, but never enough. So Rebecca did a great job in printing that. The next thing that's going to happen up there, I think, is just that I think MFA students and art students can collaborate and do things with the press, much like the alternative press was.
So it's next life in a way. It's certainly not the same. How could it be? But it has. It's having its next life.
It is indeed. Yep.
Mm-hmm. So can. Go ahead,
no,
please.
No, you tell me. Ask questions, and I'll expound forever.
Perfect. Well, we mentioned how it was free, and the poems were free, and you mentioned to me on Monday that you did send them out to some bookstores across the country, and maybe what tell us the story of what happened next, because this
All right. Well, we sent out that Ginsberg. We printed other people, but the Ginsberg poems seemed to be particularly popular in the New York bookstores. And we would get notes back from Phoenix Bookshop and Gotham Bookmart saying, love that Ginsberg poem. Do you have more? And so we would send them more. And we paid for the postage. We paid for, they would send a free poem. So we sent them to the bookstores. And what we found later, I should have brought it with me. In rare book catalogs, you could actually follow the hierarchy of American poetry by how much they were charging for these free poems we sent out. The Ginsberg poem, which was a limited first edition, limited printing, hand printed, was $65. $65 they were charging for what was a free poem. So I know bookstores need to make money, but somehow I felt exploited. After 2 years, we stopped giving poems away. And the reason we did that was because when I started the press, I had a full-time teaching job at Shaw College in Detroit. But then I got fired.
Fired?
Fired. Seven of us went on strike saying, they're going to fire us all. Oh, they did. So I was out of a job. We had the press. And, we had to make some money somehow. So we started a subscription. And we started it for $10 for a quarterly mailing. And we made the quarterly mailing for about a year and a half. And after that, it got to be really a chore. We, it was just the two of us. We did all the printing, all the artwork, all the correspondence, licked the stamps, swept the floor, did it all, because we weren't Random House. We were the alternative press.
Ken and Ann.
That was the alternative press. Yeah.
Let's take a short break and then we'll come back. Ken, thanks for picking the songs for today's program, too.
Yeah, well, there they are.
More poems by Ken ahead. Today on the program, Ken Michalowski is here. We're talking about 50 years of the alternative press. I'm T. Hetzel. We'll be back. Welcome back. You've got Living Writers. Today on the program, Ken Michalowski is here. We're talking about 50 years of the alternative press. And Christine was just singing about Ken.
Well, that was another poem. And she is really good. The reason jazz musicians really do like my poems is they're extremely short, and it gives them lots of room to do solos, you know? And so they like my poems, I guess.
So, Ken, do you think that, because a lot of your poems, people
really
can,
short.
Really short, right? A concise, the soul of brevity or so, and humor. But, and we heard that when we talked the last time for your book out with Wayne State University Press, were you writing like that way back when you began writing poems?
Or, no.
Well, not way back, but yeah, what am I saying? Yeah. But,
what? Well, 50 years is that long enough? You want to go way back? Okay.
How, yes. but, or do you think some of it was informed your process as a writer by your hand setting of type
on
the press?
Let me tell you, absolutely. And when you have to hand set every letter of every word by hand and then print them all, you start getting a little briefer in your own. You wish other poets would be briefer too. I did have a discussion with Alan about his wordiness. And, you know, that's just his style, man. He's just wordy. But I liked more poets to be a little more brief. That was less work to set the poem. It's a labor of love. It definitely is. But the accent's on the labor part, you know?
So for the broadsides that we have, and we have a few of them on the table with us that you brought in today. We talked about Jerome Rothenberg's Crazy Dog Events, Crow Indian. We've also got Bookseller, a poem by Keith Taylor. And it looks like maybe a drawing that Ann Michalowski did of Keith.
It is a drawing that Ann did of Keith, yes.
When he was at Shaman Drum?
He's a bookseller at Shaman Drum.
And then we also, what I'm drawing our attention here to is, and again, I'll put these up on Instagram, Living Writers Instagram, but these are long. These are not short.
Right.
That you've created these broadsides and Two Men, Homage à Gertrude by Anne Waldman, and then also The Museum of Tolerance by Sherman Alexie, and Gone, Gone, Gone by Allen Ginsberg, so long that you had to do it in a two column to fit it on a one sheet for the broadside.
Right.
So there, you know, proof is in the...
The proof is in the broadside. That's why I like doing postcards and bookmarks and bumper stickers, because there's only so much you can put on a postcard. I like doing postcards. There's some postcards here. I'd like to read one of them particularly. It's one by Jim Gustafson, who's my best friend, and Jim is no longer alive. And it's a jukebox poem. It says, "When I die, I just want a jukebox for a tombstone and to leave all my friends rolls of quarters." You want a warm, fuzzy poem? There it is. Way to go, Jim. Yes. So, yeah, postcards, fun things. You know?
And this one is on sort of a mustard color paper.
And Anne did the drawing of a jukebox on it, yeah. And on the back, she did a quarter for the stamp area.
Yeah. It's like everything about this makes it a beautiful piece of art.
I hope it's art. I hope so.
And this will, yes, it is. And this one is one from Grindstone City. So you and Anne, you began with the press in your basement
in Detroit,
and then you moved
after
to Grindstone
5 years.
City.
We moved from Detroit, from the inner city of Detroit, to the inner city of Grindstone City. Population 44. Yes. And after 5 years, there was a show of our work at the Artist Market in Detroit, in which Allen Ginsberg was asked to write a little introduction to it. And he said in his introduction that the alternative press products would outlast the auto industry. We almost made it, really. We almost got there.
And those, it's true. And those, that's, I mean, in a way, the press is going on. So I just feel like, and these postcards, I believe, are out there. And I just keep wondering, will some people find them and not even remember that they have them? Or I wonder if there's...
I have no control over what happens to them after I print them and distribute them. They're out of my hands.
Well, and that's part of the beauty of it, the art of it, isn't it, Ken?
Oh, I think so, very much so. The idea that not everybody, you know, did what Creeley did and didn't keep copies, but Ted Berrigan, for example, got his final book after his death came out, A Certain Slant of Sunlight, it was called, and it consisted entirely of handwritten poems he did for the press. He finished the poems at the end of April, and he died on the 4th of July. So that was the last project he did, was the Alternative Press postcards. At his wake, which is at the Poetry Project in New York, Alice, who had done the 500 postcards with Ted, said that she liked the project so much, and that it was such a good thing for them to do together, that she wanted 500 more. So Alice Notley did 1,000 handwritten No Two Alike postcards, poems. And some of those were collected in her book also that came out later. But many people just, Jim Gustafson did Jim did 3 sets of postcards. Faye Kiknaswe did the records. She did 4 sets of postcards. When Andre Kudrescu heard that Faye had done 1,000 postcards, he said, "Send me 2,000. You know, it's like it became poetry as competition, you know. Who could do the most? Many poets, though, who started the poems, like Ed Dorn, Ed decided he wanted to do the project. I printed the postcards for him. He did about 28 of them, I think. And he finally said, "You know, I don't think I can do 468 more. I can't do that. I think I'm going to quit." So he just gave up. He sent me the ones he did do, but they never got distributed because that was, you know, it was a bit much.
That wasn't the deal, right? It was the 500.
He wasn't the only one who didn't finish. Lots of people who started them did not finish them. No.
Right, because we're looking at you, Andre, right? Are we still waiting?
Andre's another one who didn't quite finish his, but...
Well, we'll move on.
He did a couple hundred anyway.
Nothing to sneeze at. But Ken, when you were saying that Alice Notley asked for another 500, do you think it was a way, like, I don't know, I
it
wonder
was a way
about
of working
grief.
Through a grief.
The
poems are almost all about the loss of Ted. And yeah, they're really wonderful, wonderful poems. And many of them have never been published because it's so personal. But whoever has that poem has a really great poem.
And Ken, do you mind if we talk about your, what it was like for you to go to try to finish the last issue the Alternative Press subscription?
Well, after Anne died in 1999, I didn't think that we had an issue that was half finished at the time of her death, and I didn't think that I could do anymore. I didn't think I could go back. I wrote my poems on my own, and made art on her own, but the press was something we did together. That was Anne and me working on the press together. So after her death, I didn't think I could do it. I'd go out to the press room and, you know, I would just sit there and cry and just couldn't do it. But then I got some pressure, not pressure, but some concern from, well, Sherman Alexie was one who wanted me to say, "I gave you the poem, you know, and you haven't done it yet. Are you still going to do it, or should I?" I said, "Yeah, I'm going to still do it." Well, It took 6 years before the issue finally came out, but I did finish it. It's called The Final Issue, Finally. And that was the last issue of the Alternative Press, which was done in 2006. Yeah.
And besides the Sherman Alexie poem, is that the one that's here?
Yes, that's
the Museum
one.
Of Tolerance?
Yeah.
Is this wasn't, this the collection that was in this envelope wasn't the final issue, though,
no,
Ken,
no,
right?
No, no, no. This is just an odd assortment of things I could find lying around.
And it's an odd and wonderful assortment. It is. We just emphasis on the wonderful, but I guess odd is wonderful too. What were some of the other things in the final issue off the top of your head?
Yes, there was an Allen Ginsberg poem that Allen wrote 9 days. No, excuse me. Yeah, not yet. 9 days before his death. It's a little Blakean song of innocence. It's a really fine little poem. It's him waking up in his loft in New York, and looking at the sky. And
Do you want to read it, Ken?
Sure. It's called Starry Rhymes, and it's really an innocent poem. It really is. Sun rises east, sun sets west. Nobody knows what the sun knows best. North Star north, Southern Cross south. Hold close the universe in your mouth. Gemini high, Pleiades low, winter sky begins to snow. Orion down, North Star up, fiery leaves begin to drop. It's called Starry Rhymes, and we did it as a postcard. In fact, there is a little story that goes with that poem, too. I had lunch with Alan 6 months after his death.
Oh,
I just
yeah. After
he died, I had lunch with him.
That's something, Ken.
Yes, it is. See, Alan's ashes were divided into thirds. One third went to the family plot in New Jersey. One third went to Naropa University out in Boulder, Colorado, and one third is here in Ann Arbor at Jewel Heart, the Tibetan Buddhist organization. And so, when Bob Rosenthal and Bill Morgan, Alan's biographer and longtime personal assistant, brought his ashes to Ann Arbor, they had asked me if I would go out to lunch with them, and they had Alan with them. We don't know which third we have, but... And then they asked me if I wanted to print another poem. So I printed many poems of Alan. So if I wanted to print something that was unpublished and one of the last poems he wrote, and they had a number of poems with them, and I felt that this was the one I really wanted to do, the Starry Rhymes poem, and so that's the one I chose to do.
And this is one that you made
in
after
the final issue, finally,
and it was after Anne had died.
Yeah.
The final issue, finally, the Alternative Press. We're going to take a short break, then we're going to be back, because it's not final yet for us, Ken.
I hope not.
Not yet.
They call it Living Writers, right?
Yep, Living Writers. That's us. We'll be right back.
Pointing out the discrepancy in your life. I'm not criticizing you. I'm just pointing out the discrepancies in your life. I'm not criticizing you. I'm just pointing out the discrepancy in your life. The discrepancy.
Welcome back. You've got Living Writers. I'm T. Hetzel today on the program. Ken Michalowski is here. We've got Steph behind the glass. And Ken pointed out at the break that we're down to the buzzer almost here.
Right. Let's have the last shot. The buzzer beater.
So to go back to the history a little bit, before we do that, the buzzer beater, you and Anne had moved the press up to Grindstone City. And then somehow you had it in you to move it again. And you brought it to, to Ann Arbor.
Moving tons of equipment is really a pain, let me tell you. We lost all our friends. They all disappeared after we moved, finally.
There's not enough pizza in the world.
Oh, boy. But we did. We got back to Ann Arbor, and when the university got the press, thank goodness they moved it. And it's out of the Duderstadt building, so that's just fine with me. And then after they took the press, I moved too. And I lived in the same house for 28 years. So finally, we sold it, and I sold it. And then I moved out to about 5 miles from Ann Arbor. I'm up the river.
Why do you think you moved, Ken?
Why? Well, because I retired from teaching after 38 years, and I didn't need to be on campus any longer. I just didn't need to be there. And the house had, it was very useful. It's much bigger. I mean, we had a big studio and had painted in the press room, and we converted a 3-car garage to a studio. And it was a great place, but it wasn't necessary for me to live there anymore. And so I happily sold it and moved out to... Up the river without a paddle.
Up the river. And you've got new poems.
I still write myself. I still keep writing. These are more of the short ones. These have written since that. And I could like to read a few of them. Why not? This one has a very good title, by the way. It's called Ken Michalowski, the Artist Formerly Known. What's old is you again. I have an earlier poem that is in that says, getting old gets old real quick. And then
I remember that one.
What's old is you again. There is no me. And then I have a series of death poems, a whole bunch of these death poems, which I find to be rather charming.
Wait, one moment, though.
Oh,
Before we get to the charming.
What?
No, I do. But what about there is no me?
Yeah, that's sort of a death poem, too. But it's sort of death of ego, I think, too. Yeah. There is no me. These are very short. Not necessarily sweet, but they're short. You know, they have redeeming qualities. The redeeming qualities is they're short. Here's one called Death. I forget you, but you remember me. Death. Yeah, well, that's that. Death. You see, I have a way with titles, though. You can tell I can really have a... Death. Wake me when it's over. Death. The meaning of life. Life, exist, then exit. Tombstone, here lies Ken, now a has-been. That's it. That's enough. That's enough.
Wait, how many more do you have there, Ken?
No more death poems, you know.
Well, let's have another one then.
You want to hear a long one?
Yeah. Oh, yes. That'll be.
No, I can't.
Writer's.
No, this
scoop.
One I can't do. This one has one of those words.
A swear? You could skip the swear.
Everyone will know what
we trust you, right?
All right, I'll skip the, okay. This is at the Grandee Ballroom, 1968. Well, the poem explains it, but I used to be, among other poets, the intermission between Iggy and the Stooges and the MC5, you know, the proper poet. I'll read the poem. This is a long poem now, though. At the Grandee Ballroom, 1968. John Sinclair, poet and manager of the MC5, asks other poets to read at the Grandee between sets. The night I get to be the intermission, the Stooges are the opening act. Iggy cuts himself up and bleeds all over the audience. They love it and go nuts and can't calm down. Brother J.C. Crawford calls out, "And now a poet will read some poems." And everyone boos and retreats to the parking lot to smoke some dope. That leaves me to read a couple poems about life, love, and revolution. One of the few remaining members of the crowd yells, "Blank the revolution! Bring on the MC5!" Someone drops a drum on stage. And on that note, my reading is over. All right, enough of that.
Thanks, Ken.
All right, T, thank you very much.
So vivid.
Vivid. Well, I was there. See, that's one of my long poems. Yeah.
Yeah. So what is it? What does it take? What are you making any long poems now, too? Or are you thinking of the death poems as like a series, so it would be read together?
What can follow the death poems? My resurrection poems?
Yeah, you said it. Exactly. Why not?
Oh, yeah.
Too many syllables?
Too many. Much too many. Resurrect. No, I can't do that.
I don't believe you. You've got this this lovely book on the table here, too.
It's called Little Mysteries, yeah. This is a book that Alan Kornblum Coffeehouse printed when the press was called Toothpaste Press. And I could read these. These are a series of short poems. Of course they're short poems. Based on the game of Clue. Remember the game of Clue? Yeah. Well, there's seven poems in the series. So here we go. Mystery number one, bludgeoned with candelabra in billiard room, Mrs. White dead. You are the suspect. Mystery number two, 10 in the dining room, one falls in the soup, poisoned. You are the host. What do you do? Mystery number three. See, I am good with titles. I really am, yeah. Mystery number three. It is late at night. You have retired to the drawing room. The butler staggers in, falls at your feet, a knife in his back. A new twist to an old story.
So Ken, how did you start thinking of making this book? And yeah, what was the idea? And Anne did
these wonderful drawings.
Drawings, yes.
Great,
yeah.
Drawings. Well, this book came about because I'd written a poem for my son, Michael, which he enjoyed. And, you know, he was like 10 years old or so. And so I thought I would try to entertain him we played the game of Clue. And so I started writing these poems and they just kept growing. And I said,
and he
now became a book.
And so it's kind of an anti-poem in a way, like where you're...
All my poems are anti-poems. I am the anti-poet.
How so? Well, you're also an award-winning, a prize-winning poet.
I'm definitely a prize-winning poet. In fact, maybe I should read my prize-winning poem one of these days again, but it was, you know, I won the Michigan Pork Barrel Award for the misspending of Michigan taxpayers' money. So, yeah.
Prize-winning. But anti-poems, like, why do you take pride in that? Which I firmly agree
well,
with you.
Okay. It's poets who give poetry a bad name, you know? And you know, so much poetry is pompous and pretentious and, well,
other p-words.
You know, not that my kind of poetry is anything any better. It's just that it's different than than those long, boring poems.
And you
okay,
can,
I know I've made a lot of enemies. All right. That did that.
And what about this beautiful little book that you brought on the table with us,
okay,
too?
This is a book of mine that's been translated into Polish, and it's a hardbound little book, and I guess it was translated into Polish because maybe I'm Polish. Mikolowski sounds Polish to me. Anyway, they translated the book poems into Polish, and out came the book, and I was pleased by that.
I feel like there's so much more ahead, and there's going to be something in our mailbox soon somehow. Like, I feel like, Ken Mikolowski, you always have something up each sleeve. He's checking now.
I didn't see anything, but okay.
Well, we're at the end of our conversation, Ken, and I've so loved it today.
Thank you, T, for having me on. Thank you much.
Please come back anytime. We'll keep talking stories. We've got so many poems here on the table with us.
Yeah, we
There's
do.
More stories ahead. Today on the program, you've been listening to Ken Mikolowski talk with us about 50 years of the alternative press. You can catch the exhibit now in the Audubon Room in the Hatcher Graduate Library through June 2nd, Free Poems and Functional Art, 50 Years of the Alternative Press. Ken Mikolowski, Ann Mikolowski, part of their life's work, and I'm so grateful for it and so grateful for you, Ken. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll be back. Until next time, I'm T. Hetzel.